take advantage of every opportunity that you have to create yourself some free time. Mm. Use that income that's a steady income that you have to get yourself in a position for if it does take off, the tight times.
All right, picture this. You're sitting in your office and your boss is going on and on and on. He's just droning about this and that, and you really don't like it. The next thing you know, he calls you into your office and he lets you go. That was Sam's reality. So Sam had a wife and a kid and he gets let go. Then he tells us the story of how that happened, but then he also goes into how he started his own business in this whole process. And I'll be honest with you, he started this business in a way that I would probably do it, and honestly, in the way that I did it myself along our journey with MealFit. So we're going to go through today and talk about how he had this kind of those proverbial golden handcuffs of corporate America and how he got out of those golden handcuffs. But the process in which he did it is extremely tactical in how he did it. So Sam Stewart, thank you for joining me today.
All right, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Sam, give me the high-level version of, like, the professional career from here. Because Sam's in that age range of me. He's probably in your late 30s, early 40s.
I'd be mid-40s.
Mid-40s. There you go. So give me the high-level version of, like, this professional career that you have. Went to Jacksonville State.
Yep.
Just show up.
That's right.
What the JSU stands for.
It does.
Just sign up.
It was sign up.
Just sign up.
And then they made it a little more difficult.
Exactly.
So now you have to show
up. You got
to show up.
So give me that professional journey.
Well, I left Jacksonville State, gosh, I guess it's 2003, not too long before I got married, and came over, was working with Verizon Wireless in Quintard Mall in Oxford, and I ended up moving one of their stores over here to Birmingham, my wife and I did. And one of my coworkers there, her dad worked at Petrie Wholesale, and it's a convenience store wholesale company in Montgomery. I got on there, worked there for about 5 or 6 years.
So they owned a bunch of different...
Well, they were a wholesale company. So they sold pretty much anything you buy in a gas station except gas and beer. Anything kind of gum, cigarettes, tobacco,
they sold
candy,
all that.
Anything.
Oh,
anything,
okay.
We didn't sell Golden Flake or Coca-Cola or anything like that, but anything else that you would buy.
Wow, okay.
And so did that for 5 years or so, 6 years. And one of my customers hired me away to be his operations manager. Took that job, and that lasted for about a year.
Now, how old were you at the time?
I was 30.
Okay.
30 years old.
All right.
I had one child.
Wow.
Mackenzie was 2 and a half and took this job, and Shelby was born 6 months after I took the job. And then six months after that, I got let go. So I had two kids.
You got two kids and you get let go.
Got two kids under the age of 3 and under and got let go.
Oh, my God.
And no job.
Wow. What was your wife doing?
She was with Regions Bank at the time.
Okay. So nothing, not making.
She was doing okay. We could keep the lights on and
weren't going to
peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but that was.
Yeah, you're not taking big vacations.
No, we're not. We're not eating out.
Okay.
We're in dire straits.
So you get let go. You got two kids. What then?
I was unemployed for about 6 weeks and I just said, okay, my job is finding a job. Mm-hmm. That's my job every day. And we had to pull Shelby out of daycare because save money. Mm-hmm. And so, bless her heart, she's sitting there in the crib, and I'm filling out job applications online.
Yeah.
And ended up, a friend of mine from Anniston, she knew a guy at Cisco and got me on there. And
wow.
Been in a lot of restaurants, eating a lot of them, but never worked in one. And, yeah. But I'd sold, and I knew I could talk to people and build relationships.
So Cisco is a food distributor, yep. Huge food distributor here in the South, and they sell to hundreds of thousands of restaurants and businesses and things like that. I've used Cisco before. Mm-hmm. One of my best friends is a Cisco rep, Will Charette, down in Cisco Gulf Coast. It's a great company, really, really good company. So you're at Cisco selling. So what you do is you go into restaurants,
right,
and you try to convince MealFit or, you know, Chewy's to buy their food from you.
Correct. Not just the food, but anything. I mean, as you well know,
yep.
You know, it could be your anything from your to-go trays to your canned lunch, yeah, or whatever. So I did that and was just, you know, it was okay.
Yeah.
And it was a job, and I was just thankful to have one. Yeah, I never really had a passion for it,
mm-hmm,
and did that for, I guess, about a year and a half, and it was going well. And I knew when I was unemployed for a while that I wanted to start my own business.
Okay, so what was the aha moment that inspired you to start your own business?
I would say when the Cisco thing happened, when I got that speeding ticket, it was like, okay.
Do what now?
I got a speeding ticket, and I almost lost my job a second time. And at that point, I said, okay, maybe I need to get a little motivated because I had thought about starting my own business when I was unemployed.
Mm.
And then I got it going with Cisco. And then I just said, I kind of put it on the back burner. You know, sales had gone well. growth was good.
Right.
And just kind of got on the back burner. And then I got a speeding ticket, and it violated some kind of corporate policy. It was one of those lawyer policies that I've ever heard, but I almost lost my job over it again. And so I had to finagle some, call in some favors and got the speeding ticket kicked back and was able to hang on to my job. And at that point I said, you better do something. This is your sign.
So, okay. So you're working at a job. You're making probably decent money.
Doing okay.
Keeping the lights on. You can do things. How did you start your own company?
I just started researching. I mean, to your point, I was doing okay. Wasn't it great? I didn't have a whole lot of money to put into something. So I started kind of researching what could I do that would generate some income that would not going to cost me a whole lot to get into. Obviously, didn't want to do anything with like a retail front or anything that's going to tie me into a lot of overhead.
Right.
So I found about carpet cleaning. I just thought, okay, this is something I can do.
Service-based business.
Service. I can keep the equipment at my house.
Yep.
I don't have to tie myself up or anything.
You can co-clean the carpet yourself.
There you go. That's what I did. Is I bought a what I call a souped-up rug doctor, basically what you get at the grocery store, and right up at the Hampton Inn and Hilton Garden Inn in Trussville is where I started.
How do you identify and validate your business idea while you're still employed?
I knew that that's something that I could do while I was still taking orders. I mean, I could get my laptop and my boss may not know about it, but I could go clean carpet for 2 or 3 hours and knock that out and still work this or go make a couple of sales calls for myself and then do that because I had that flexibility.
Yeah.
I was on the
road. It's a good part about a sales job.
It is a good part about a sales job as I actually had that flexibility to be able to go do that. You know, if I had been stuck in an office, obviously a little more restricted on what my options would have been. So I kind of was lucky in that aspect.
You're working at Cisco. You decide you want to be in the carpet cleaning business. You said that your first job was the Hampton Inn over here in Trussville. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that first sales call, that first process.
I walked in and talked to the owner, and I had no idea how to price it. I didn't know how to do whatever, and I just guesstimated. I was just desperate for somebody to write me a check. Somebody write me a check.
I need a check.
With my name on it.
Yes.
And for my company and something that I earned for myself. And I went out there and I think I cleaned those hotel rooms for $8 a room and I gave them free hallway cleaning. I mean, I was desperate because I was so miserable with what I was doing. And this internal drive to start my own business was just churning. And I just had to do so. And I was willing to work for daggum near free just to pursue that. And I knew that I had that drive. And at that point, it's just, I've got to do this. It's not that I'm passionate about carpet. Right? It's just, I was working for myself.
It's very, very, if you've never done it before, it's extremely difficult to explain to people. It's kind of like having kids. Like, I've got a friend. Well, I'm sitting at a workout group this morning. And we were talking about marriage and Jesus and just the things of life. I looked over and there's a kid over there. He ain't married. He ain't got no kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he don't get it. And he don't know he don't get it. So like, but it's the same way with owning your own business.
Mm-hmm.
People think that they want to do it. It's hard. And people don't know that it's hard because it's just like having a kid. Mm-hmm. It is extremely difficult. And explaining that to somebody is extremely difficult. And you can't really explain it.
You can't. People think that because your name is on the business, that you just put your name on a business license and the money starts flowing in.
It don't.
And there's nothing could be farther from the truth.
So what was the biggest challenges you faced in the early days of juggling both roles?
There were some time constraints, but I think probably just my attitude and about Cisco, because I felt so much more fulfilled owning my own business. And again, it was not about carpet. It was just doing it for myself. And I felt that every time I did something, it's like this feels more like me than anything for Cisco at all. And so I had to balance the time, had to do what I could, make calls when I could, but take care of my responsibilities when I could. There became a point in time where my business had gotten up a little bit. I was having some residual, and I was probably bringing in somewhere around 50% to 60% of what I was at Cisco for the business. I had to kind of just, you know, put that, let's just see where I'm at. And then I was at a Mexican restaurant in Blountsville, Alabama. And
selling groceries.
And we had sold them a $15 case of tomatoes. And I went in there for the third week in a row, and that was old when we brought it. It was a bad case of tomatoes. I went there for a third week in a row, and that case had not been picked up. And this owner's looking at me like, you know, y'all sent them to me bad. What's going on? And I did some research, and in a Fortune 100 company like Cisco, we had to have approval for four different people to pick up an out-of-date $15 case of tomatoes. And at that point, I realized, I'm done.
Wow.
I got nothing left for this. That was the straw that broke the camel's back.
So you're working at Cisco. Mm-hmm. You've got your side job.
Yep.
What do you do with the business money from your side job while you're still living off your Cisco money?
I tried to keep it as separate as I could. At the same time, we had those two kids, and we were still trying to, you know, and we had a third one at this point. Carter was born. So when I started, I sold my first pressure washing contract in August of 2012, and I had no pressure washer. And
Cody Sanchez would be proud.
And I left Cisco in January of 13. So you're talking about a 5-month window there. Now, I had kind of started piddling with the cleaning business in late 11, messing around a little bit, but when I just kind of doing the hotel thing, but when I got bigger contracts was late 12. So there really was, we had the third kid at that point, and then I left in January of 13.
So you didn't have a ton of there wasn't a ton of overlap. Whereas I worked two jobs for probably a year and a half.
Yeah, there was not a lot of overlap at all.
Okay.
Well, I was doing small jobs, $100 a month, $200 a month. It's kind of
so
things,
not big,
but not big,
not
nothing,
big, not
nothing
real
sustainable.
Money. Okay, let's go practical.
Okay,
give me at least one practical tip for maintaining your W-2 job while juggling a new business.
Take advantage of every opportunity that you have. Do not have it in your mind that your weekends are yours anymore, because they're not.
Mm.
Your evenings are not yours anymore. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, your job is 24 hours a day.
So the whole process of starting a business, like you hear Gary Vaynerchuk talk about all the time, like he would come home from his liquor store and they would work from, you know, 8 o'clock at night till 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. That's pretty true.
It is. This morning I was up at 3 o'clock in the morning going to pressure wash.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was working at the church doing meal fit, I would put the kids to bed, work till 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
Now I would work from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock. I wouldn't work as many hours, but like, I mean, we were still working a lot. And then when we started actually doing food, I mean, it was all the time.
And that's what I tried to do too.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think that people don't really understand that, like, you got to do everything at the beginning. I say you got to do everything. If there's a better way out there to do it, I don't know it. And I talk to people like you. Mm-hmm. You're not telling me that you did everything. The people that own their own thing, at one point, they most of the time did everything unless they buy a business that's already up and functioning. And we didn't do that.
Correct.
What was your approach to networking and building business relationships without jeopardizing your W-2 job?
I think that one kind of gets back to the flexibility of having, I was on the road, so I kind of had that. But at the same time, I just knew I had to continue to develop a little bit, pretty much. And I hate to say it like this. Sorry, Larry, if you're listening to this. Keep my boss at bay.
Sure.
Bare minimum. That's what I did.
Yeah.
It's just bare minimum because all of my extra effort was going into this.
Right. You know,
hit what I got to hit and be done, and then push towards what you want to push towards.
Let's get into leaving the business. So you have left this business. Now here's the tactical part I want to know. And give me as good a number as you can give me. How much about, give me a range, how much were you making at Cisco? And then how much were you bringing in with the cleaning business when you quit?
When I left, when I got let go, there was a 3-year time window there from the time that I left Cisco where I took a 1/3 pay cut and added two kids. And
break that down. Tell me. Like,
when I left Petrie Wholesale in, I could say, 2009, I was making mid to upper 60s.
Okay.
When I took the job with my customer, I took a pay cut. I thought it was going to be a long-term buyout situation.
Yeah.
Didn't work out. And then by the time I got to the Cisco job, we were in the middle of the recession at that point. A lot of people are losing their jobs. People are making 120, making jobs, making 100. And everybody's pretty much stair-stepping down.
Right.
And that's what I found myself. So I went from mid to upper 60s to low to mid 40s and added two kids.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So okay. It's tough. It was tough.
So you're doing that at Cisco.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question that people ask me all the time, and I'm going to ask you. I know you talk about the jumping off point of the tomato story.
Right.
Was there a number in your mind where you said, I need to be making this much money in order to leave my W-2?
Get close. Okay. Just get close and figure it out. Because I told myself.
How about that advice, folks? Get close and figure it out. There you go.
Story of my life.
Story of my life.
Get close and figure it
That's
out.
That's right.
Fake it till you make it.
That's right.
Sell the pressure washer contract.
Sounds like Sounds like most people's dating lives.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. But it was just a get close, be able to survive. And then I left, and we had been doing some work with the Chick-fil-A in Trussville and Roebuck. And about 6 weeks after I left, I had not gotten the pressure washing business there. But about 6 weeks after I left, I got a call from the manager that the guy that they were using had gone out of business.
Mm.
And I'd always told him, look, I just want to be on. I'm gonna hang out here, and I'll take care of your tile floor. We'll take care of your playground. If there's ever an opportunity, I want an opportunity, and an opportunity opened up, and that just happened to be when I most desperately needed it. And when I got that contract, and the guy that owns that, Mark Nichols, I'll tell him, he knows this story. I told him this. That saved me.
Really?
His pressure washing business saved me.
Wow.
Because with that contract, I was making $1,000 to $1,500 a month more than I was making at Cisco.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I knew I can feed my family.
I can do this now.
I can feed my family.
Okay, so
before then, I didn't know if it was.
We were sitting at the lake, and you told a really good story, a really tactical story.
Mm-hmm.
You were working the job at Cisco, and you said, my goal is to do this in order to build this business. You were talking about sales calls or contacts. Give me some actual tactical things you were doing daily to start this cleaning business while working your W-2.
My in-person goals when I was with Cisco trying to build this, a minimum of 1 to 2, but my goal was 3 quality, what I considered quality conversations a week, where I'm having a conversation with somebody who's actively looking to buy,
mm-hmm.
not handing a card, not running interference, not that, a quality conversation. And then when I left Cisco, I wanted to have one of those every day.
Every day.
And then I wanted to have 2 bids every week going out.
So your goal when you first got out, I want to have 1 quality conversation a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get 2. I want to give 2 bids a week.
A week.
Did that ever increase? Did you ever bump that goal up?
It did not. It did not because at that point, you know, I don't want to get every bid. If I'm getting every bid, I'm too cheap.
Too cheap. That's right.
Hey,
mark that down. If you're getting every bid, you are too cheap. Whether you do landscaping,
doesn't matter.
Food. We are probably 70, we're probably a 30% conversion rate. We probably get 30% of the bids that come in. Hey, can you price this catering thing? We're probably 30, I don't know, probably 30%. But if you're getting everything you bid for, you're too cheap.
There you go. You're selling yourself short. You're selling your family short.
Mm.
You just say, hey, I made this sale, or hey, I do business with them. Well, that's fine. If you don't make any money out of it, you're just running in circles.
Is there a time and a place to win the bid with at any cost in order to parlay that relationship for the future?
I think there is. I mean, there's a time, and there's a time where you kind of do those. I mean, you hear them in the grocery store, loss leaders, things like that. I mean, there's things that I do for accounts now that I don't make any money off of, but I do it to keep other people out. You know, I like mark my territory.
That's great.
And I like, one of them is windows. I hate cleaning windows. I don't want to clean windows. But if somebody asks me to do it, I'll find somebody to do it, and I'll run it through me, and I don't care if I make anything of it or not. Because a lot of your window guys also could get into other aspects of the cleaning business, and I just keep them out.
Mm. That's really, really good. That's really, really. Like someone asks me for coffee sometimes. Sometimes we'll just add it on there just so that, you know, they don't leave for, we got good coffee, but like that's not our thing. You know what I'm saying? Who are your biggest influences in business?
I guess early on, my dad and granddad, I think, would probably be the two that I would point to the most. That's who I worked with. My first job was 15 years old working for my granddad at Stewart Cleaners in Anniston. And
so they own their own business.
They did. My great granddad started it.
Wow.
He started Stewart Cleaners in 1914.
And then your granddad did it.
And my granddad owned it from there. My dad owned it. And actually, my dad started his tuxedo business out of the dry cleaning business. And my dad, at one time, was the largest tuxedo wholesaler in Alabama. And he shipped into Georgia and Florida, all over the place. He's one of the biggest in the Southeast, shipping tuxedos.
Is tuxedo still a thing? No. Not at all.
Sure. Yeah. I got a cummerbund.
Exactly. I haven't heard that word in 20 years.
I should have worn it down here.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but no, he sold that in 2002, and they and everything was gone at that point. But those three generations had it. And you ask about influences. And the other guy that influenced me a lot is a guy named Jack Sanders.
Okay.
Jack was my boss at Petrie. He gave me my first real job. I consider that my first real job. And, you know, Jack, while my dad and granddad taught me a lot about working with, you know, with people and employees and dealing with, you know, the personal aspects of it, it was at its core a retail business, being a dry cleaning and a tuxedo business. Working with Jack, I got the business-to-business sales side to it.
Mm.
And it was, you know, calling on that convenience store and then talking to that cashier, frontline cashier, and then turning around and going talking to that multimillionaire CEO of an oil company and being able to handle to both of them and cater to both of them and relate to both of them.
Is that a skill or is that innate?
I think it could be developed to a point. But some people have the personality for it and some people don't.
I think I have the personality for it, but I'm going to give you a great like tactical thing. Is when I was in college, coaching college, mm-hmm. I had to go in and talk to the high school football coach that's making $60,000 a year. And then I had to, in 3 hours, be talking to the college president. And then 20 minutes later, be talking to the guy that gives us $1 million a year.
Yeah.
And you had to be able to speak the language of the high school ball coach that's having to teach friggin', you know, U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to go talk to the guy that's running the university. You got to go talk to the guy that's made $100 million last year. All in the same afternoon.
Yep.
And the more you do that, the better you can be at it.
You do. You get better at it. But it is a different conversation.
And totally different conversation.
And it's not anything positive or negative about anybody. It's just a different conversation. But you also gain the skills to do that, to mm-hmm. your point. Once you can do it a few times, you can roll through it. But you got to get that experience.
You got to. Lay out the process of your first job was cleaning carpets. Mm-hmm. Give me the journey from there.
Okay. I started cleaning the carpet just because it was just something I could make a decent amount of money per hour. I don't even clean carpets anymore. Hadn't cleaned them in eight years. But it kind of led into me getting into the cleaning business. And a guy named Robert Stewart, no relation. He lives up in Nashville. We went to high school with my dad. He was in the janitorial business. And I went up there and spent a couple of days with him, and he really opened up his operation to me and said, this is what I got. This is what's possible. And so using the you know, stuff I'd learned from Jack and Cisco and stuff I'd learned from Robert and his business model, I just kind of went from there and just tried to grow it as much as I could.
So where did you go from carpet cleaning?
Went from carpet cleaning to most of janitorial work and pressure washing. And then janitorial was the thing that we added the last. And it's actually the biggest part of our business now. We're 90% janitorial.
When you say janitorial, give me an example.
That's going to be your nighttime cleaning stuff. We're going to come in your office, sweep them off the floors, take out the trash, clean the bathrooms, just your run-of-the-mill commercial. We don't do any residential. It's all commercial stuff. But that's 85 to 90% of what we do. We do some pressure washing. We do a lot of work with Chick-fil-A, Zaxby's, and Sonic.
And Chick-fil-A checks don't bounce, do they?
They do not. And they're on time.
They're on time.
Thank you, by the way.
Thank you. So the service business and cleaning business, so not many people know this. So I graduate from college, and I've told you this story before. I graduate from college, I go to Atlanta. I'm working, teaching at a high school, coaching ball in the afternoon. And then there's a guy that used to be the head coach at the high school who got divorced, and his wife... I mean, even though he's a high school teacher, his wife just took everything that they'd ever had. And he had to get out of coaching and make more money. Mm-hmm. So what he did is he got into janitorial cleaning.
Yeah.
And it was him and a trailer. And he got all of these accounts by himself. Every now and again, he'd bring somebody in. And we would lift weights in the morning before school. And he said, you want to come help me? I got a job this weekend. You'll come help me? I go, yeah, coach, I'll go help. So I start working for this guy. And he cleans like these, just anything at night. We would clean the public storage corporate buildings. We would clean office buildings and things like that. Pull the trashes, sweep and mop, dust. And I did that for 2 years. But he was making, at the time, this is 2003, 2004, he was bringing in $180,000 a year. That's pretty darn good. And just for inflation, I don't know what that is in 2024, but you're looking at 22 years later.
Very good.
That's pretty good. And it was just him and some equipment and a trailer.
Right.
And I might, and here's the thing about a service business I think is really critical is you can get that equipment paid off pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Once you get that equipment paid off, Sam, I mean, you can make some money.
You can. You can. I went from my first year, I would, let's say my first full year, and I told you what I was making when I left. I sold $108,000 my first year. So I went from, I'd done a little better at Cisco at that point. I probably was mid to upper 40s. But when I went first full year, I did 108. Now, obviously, there's expenses that come out of that.
Sure.
But even with those expenses, you're way over what I was doing at Cisco.
Yeah.
Second year, over double. Third year again. And then after that, took off after that.
Let's walk through the service business.
Okay.
How can someone out there walk in to a customer and sell that service? Let's just talk janitorial. Let's walk through what that looked like.
I think with any service business, and janitorial is this way, and I credit a lot of my success to this, is bringing some professionalism into an industry that is lacking in some areas. Being that one that's, you're going to call them back. You're going to text them back. You're going to look them in the eye, and you're going to shake their hand, and you're going to mean what you say.
Yeah.
You're going to be there when you say you're going to be there. And if you make a mistake, you own it, and just care. And that transpires across any service industry, any industry really.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me. And I've heard a buddy of mine, Brandon Lewis, said this one time, and it was so true. Because it's amazing to me how hard you have to chase people down to give them your money.
Yeah.
Because they just don't call back, or they just kind of halfway do a job or leave. It's just crazy to me.
We did a video not long ago, and the title of the video is just call people back. And like,
that's all you gotta do,
Sam. I can't tell you how many times that we've got on calls, and Emily, who runs all of our planning for Table and Time, and she goes, I said, how do we get this job? And she goes, Thomas, she said, the lady said, I called 4 catering companies. You're the only one that called me back. If you'll just call people back, whether no matter what you do, if you just call people back, because there's a large group of people out there that don't want to do things digitally. And it's not just old people. I'm not old. I look at Sierra sometimes. Sierra's more digital than I am. I look at Sierra sometimes. Hey, pick up the phone, call them. Just call them. Because where a lot of people are more comfortable texting, emailing, whatever, I want to physically talk to somebody. And if someone don't call me back, I'm just like, nah. But if I call whoever, landscape, I keep going back to landscape because it's a service business, but like anything, and someone calls me back, you're going to get my business unless you're just the most 10 times more expensive than anybody. And just call people back.
You separate yourself so much just by doing something that simple.
Just by doing that. All right, looking back, what's the one thing you'd wish you'd known before starting out on this business owner journey?
To do it sooner.
Mm.
I'm unemployable, Thomas.
Yeah.
I cannot be hired by another company. I mean, I can't. I would absolutely be miserable. And in my mind, I go back to how miserable I was in those days of, being in the corporate grind. But that would be my main thing that I would tell myself is do it sooner.
Got it.
Even though I needed to gain the experience. I mean, I guess I couldn't have done it until I had the experience, but just, I've talked to my son about it and my kids, This is you're going to be have a drive to do this, follow it. And I'll never forget something that Jack told me one time. And he said, he told me, he goes, you're not committed to this job. I said, Jack, I'm committed. He said, has he ever heard the analogy of the pig and the chicken? And he said, the chicken is committed to breakfast. The chicken is involved in breakfast, but the pig is committed. And he said, you're involved in this business. You're not committed.
Mm.
Your family has owned businesses for generations. That's what you're wired to do. He told me that in 2005, 2006.
Wow. How long did it take after that conversation to go, he was right?
5 years.
5 years.
5 years.
Wow. Sometimes it's hard to listen to what people breathe into you when in reality.
It is.
We think we know different things. Right. How did the corporate experience shape your approach to running your own business?
I think the corporate side of things, I learned some different metrics and different ways to look at things. But I also wanted to know that when I started my business, I wanted to be responsive, that I wanted to be somebody that is going to be able to respond quickly to an issue, be flexible, and make it easy to do business with me.
Make it easy.
And that's what I found at Cisco is they just, it seems like they made it difficult to do business with them sometimes.
Were there any unexpected advantages to starting a business while you were employed?
I would say probably the experience that I gained from that and having being able to earn that income while not relying on the business, that would be the biggest thing is not having to worry. I mean, I had to worry about finances, obviously, but the business wasn't having to feed my family while growing at the same time.
Yeah. We rat holed a lot of money that second year. Mm-hmm. So that first year we made about 40 grand and I made about $40,000 working at the church and I made eight doing meal plans that first year.
Did you?
$8,000.
$8,000.
The second year, I made $30,000 at the church because halfway through the year, I went part-time.
Okay.
So I worked full-time the first 6 months, and then the second half of the year, I went part-time because the business was getting out of hand. So the first year, I made $40,000 and then $8,000. So $48,000, which is not a lot with two kids. Mm-hmm. The second year, I made $30,000 and $80,000. So we went from $8,000 to $80,000. And at that point, mm-hmm. I knew, all right, let's go. Now,
you knew you had something.
I knew I had something. And I had also been extremely wise financially. I rat-holed so much money, Sam.
Did you?
Yeah. I was making 60 grand a year coaching, and I knew I was going to take a pay cut. And so I looked at Jackie, and I about week three of the season, I was coaching in college. We had just gotten back. We had we'd gotten beat by Oregon. And we had lost our quarterback, and something was gone inside of me, and something was pulling, and I just walked in, Jack, and said, all right, we're done. And she goes, what are we going to do? I go, I don't know, but it ain't this.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I took our budget and adjusted our budget. We were making about $80,000 a year in the household. I was making about 60, she's making about 20, and we adjusted it down to about 50,000. I adjusted our budget really, really quickly. And when I adjusted that budget, we had to tighten down so many things with two kids. It was really difficult. But then when I started work at the church, I had adjusted the budget to pretty close to what we were going to make.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not super hard. Now, granted, it was hard work, raising two kids and on $50,000 a year when there's four of us in the household. But when I made any money at all, bro, I saved it. And then I didn't have many expenses that first and second year. And then I took that second year when we were making a lot more money and I rat-holed it away because I knew that, like, hey, we were going to have something. The thing that saved us, I think, at the beginning was we had residual income. We were doing meal plans before meal plans were a thing. We had clients in, 20 different countries. And so we had 40 bucks a month coming in on X number of people.
Right. Right.
And so we had that residual. And so I knew that I could live off that residual because it was about what I was making. But in anything extra, I could use that to grow the business. And I'm going to tell you something. We lived really frugally for probably 2 years. Because that third year, we made about 160. That fourth year, we made about 340. And we were still living like we were making 60. And I will tell people, I will tell people this. If you could keep your lifestyle, your income, your lifestyle at a smaller income, and even as you grow that income, you can make it. Because what happens is a lot of people, the money comes in one hand, it goes out on the left hand. And if that happens in your business to start off with, you're not going to be in business long.
Yeah. It's guilty of that.
Yeah.
Lifestyle creep, as I've heard it called.
Oh, yeah.
Guilty. More guilty than most. But, to your point, when you're maxed out like that every month, there is no room for error. And when you're self-employed, you don't get a check every other Friday or on a certain time of the month like everybody else does.
No.
You don't know when it's coming in, and you have to be prepared to go that extra week and a half or something. And you can't exactly go calling your customers up and say, hey, I know the month's halfway over, but I've spent all my money. Can you write me a check? Can you prepay me for the second 2 weeks? I mean, you ain't doing that. And you just got to hope that it comes in.
How did you handle telling your employer about your side business?
I think I just kind of started out just saying, hey, I'm just kind of doing this a little bit on the side on the weekends. And just kind of, I didn't want to make it a big deal. Just kind of, on the weekend, left it like that.
He was supportive.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He was just like, hey, make some extra money. I don't think that either one of us thought what it could become. I don't think he thought I was going to be leaving. I didn't know we'd be the size we are now, definitely. So I think it just – he was fine. I just don't think it was not really – me leaving was not in the cards at that time. Or so far off, it was not a concern.
Very rarely in business do you end up doing what you start out doing. Mm-hmm. What made you expand to other services in your business?
Carpet cleaning was kind of something to make a little money. It's nothing I really got excited about. It was just trying to make some extra money. But when I added the pressure washing, it was like, okay, I can make even more money doing that. And I enjoy the work a whole lot better, a whole lot more, excuse me. And then when I added the janitorial, I went where the market took me. I mean, people were asking, you know, do you do this? Do you do that? And then,
yes.
Well, yeah, sure, we can do that. And, you know, then I met up with Robert and got his kind of his framework. But that was the main thing. At that point, I just completely shifted to janitorial and pressure washing. I'm just not even going to go after any carpet business anymore. It just allowed me to scale it. Hey, I'm going to be honest with you. If I can make money and not be there, I would rather that than make money and be there and break my back.
Sure.
It's just, if I'm being honest. So, the janitorial, we could go out. We could go several cities, could expand more of a geographical area, and I'm not out till 3 in the morning.
Are you growing that janitorial business now?
We are. We have 3 offices now. We have an office in the main one in Trussville, and then me and a buddy of mine from high school started an office in Anniston. We're 50-50 in that, and then a friend of mine I was in KA with at Jacksonville State owned office in Gulfport, Mississippi. So between the 3 companies, we're 55 to 60 employees, something like that. Always adding new customers.
Okay, so this is a good question. So you own the business in Trussville?
Yes.
100%, Sam.
100%.
The one in Oxford, Anniston.
I'm 50-50.
Okay, but it's the same business?
Same type business. More pressure washer centric. We trade work back and forth. We do some truck washing, 18-wheeler washing through that company. We've got an account down in kind of in East Alabama that we do almost 100 trucks a month that we wash down there. We run somewhere about 30 to 35 fast food restaurant jobs a month through that company.
Pressure washing.
And then also janitorial business. That's probably about 60 to 70% pressure washing over there. And then the rest is janitorial.
Tell me about the one in Gulfport.
That's just only janitorial. There's no, we don't do any pressure washing.
And you own that 50% with somebody else.
He's a lawyer down there. He's a guy I was in KA with, and he'd been down there for on the coast and just hit me up one day when my wife and I were down there and said, hey, what's going on? Hadn't talked to you in a while. And I had checked in on Facebook and he had sent me a message and said, let's get together. And we hang out and get a napkin at a restaurant and hatch a business plan. This was 2017.
Is he absentee owner now? Is he doing anything with the business?
No, he does. Yeah, he's active.
He is?
He's active. But he's a lawyer by trade, but he's active.
Let's talk money on that. Okay. So you've got the experience. There's no business in Gulfport.
None.
Okay, he says what? Give me like what he said. Hey, let's do this.
He said, hey, I've been noticing your business up there. Tell me about it. And so I just started talking. He said, do you think it could go here? And sure. So I mean, it could go anywhere. And we chatted back and forth. And I just said, hey, I'll find a couple of days and ride down here. Actually, funny story. I came down to Gulfport or Biloxi to start making some sales calls. And I found this medical clinic. And I went and actually it was behind a Chick-fil-A. And I had called on the Chick-fil-A because of my experience up here. And I just saw this medical clinic and went and walked in. And I said, hey, I'm, Sam Stewart with cleaning service. They said, actually, we're taking bids right now and it closes this afternoon. And this was like at 10:30. I said, what kind of bid are you taking? They said, well, it's a hospital in town. We need 9 clinics cleaned. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. So I scrap my plans. I get the clinic list, hit them as quick as I can. And me and my business partner are sitting down there having dinner that night. And I get a notification on my phone that the guy who had sent me the clinic list was trying to recall the email. And it was very strange. I never had that happen before. And I get to looking at it. And the clinic list that he had sent me included a competitor's bid on the second tab of the Excel spreadsheet.
Did you see the tab?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, yes, I did. Yes, I did. I used it.
And we happened to come in just a little bit underneath that bid and won the contract. It's just kind of... But dumb luck, just absolutely stumbled.
Bear Bryant, I'd rather be lucky than good any day.
Stumbled into it, and we.
That was your first.
That was our first business in Mississippi.
So your first business in Mississippi was a 9 clinic daily or nightly.
Correct. 5 nights a week with a major hospital down there, and we got it because I just stumbled in the door.
Amen. How about that?
Kind of wild.
So financially, what did the, what did y'all, so it's the first year, first 6 months, y'all just said, okay, this is going to cost 20 grand. You 10, me 10. This is going to cost 10 grand. Five, me five, you five. Did y'all do it?
We did. Actually, that's the good thing about this business is you really don't have, I mean, you could go to Home Depot and spend $500 and you're in the business. I mean, if you wanted to, it's just really not, the barrier to entry is not that large. So really it was just, you know, when we sold that, it's like, okay, well, this is what it's going to cost to get it going. And let's put a little bit of money to operate with. And then at that point it was, we put it in and we go. But I think it's probably, I mean, right now to stock a building, probably $400 or $500 that you could probably get it done decently.
Wow.
So you're talking about under $5,000 for those 9 clinics, and that's it in 2024 prices. And we're talking about 7 years ago.
How did you grow that business remotely?
It is not, it's not as nearly as large as what we are up here. We've grown some, a lot of word of mouth. We've done some Google advertising and things like that. But you know, with him having his career established down there, he's not looking to like do it full time. It's kind of, you know, let's just make some extra money. You know, kind of get it to the point where we can put some money in our pocket. And we've got somebody that we recently hired that's going to be kind of helping us look over some stuff down there. And so that'll put us in a position to grow more. We're pretty excited about that.
How important are Google ads in growing your business now?
They have helped. I do think that, you know, sometimes they can get expensive. They can get very expensive, but they can't help. But I think what I have found that has helped me is short-term campaigns. You know, do it for a little while.
What is a little while?
6 to 8 months.
Okay.
You know, it's not a permanent thing. You know, run about a 6 to 8 month campaign. You may get two or three accounts out of it, however many it ends up being. And then just kind of pull it back. Let's stabilize, make sure we're good there, servicing those like we need to.
And then restart them later.
Restart back up.
What have you learned through all this that you will make sure that your kids learn from you?
I would say that they were going to probably have an internal drive that is just not something that they're going to be able to deny to want to be their own boss. And I was talking to my daughter. She's a senior this year at Hewitt Trustful. She's going to go to Auburn, be a nursing. I was talking to her last night about this same thing. And I said, you're going to eventually have, if you don't already, a drive to want to own your business or be your own boss. It's in your blood. The four generations before you have done this, you're going to have, at least on some level. And she's going into nursing. And we started talking about things that she could do as offshoots of that, you know, any of these women's clinics, you know, imaging, anything that she could do to start her own business and not have to be an MD.
And have the nursing credentials that will help her do that.
Yeah, so that's what she decided last night. So what she's going to do is major in nursing and minor in business.
I'm going to ask a question in a different way. As a business owner, what are some things that you teach your kids that you want to make sure that they know?
That the idea of growing up and working for someone, just getting a job, is a very honorable thing to do, but it's not the only way.
Yeah.
And that people are going to pick their career. I think people pick their career based on their risk tolerance.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
absolutely.
You have people who get into education and they love education, but they also like that tenure.
Oh yeah. Safety.
I mean, there you go. Guaranteed check.
Yeah.
And then you got the other side of it, which is the entrepreneur.
Sure.
That's the gambler.
Yeah.
And where people fall in there is where they're going to feel most comfortable and find themselves in their career. And it may be that they worked a shift job you got the retirement, you got the benefits, you got the whole thing. And that's great. That's awesome. Some of us are not wired that way. Some of us would be absolutely miserable in that experience, in that existence. And
does your wife do anything with y'all's business?
She does. She helps out with some payroll, with the Gulf Coast, Mississippi company.
Yeah. Okay.
So she helps out, stays involved with that. She's also helpful, you know, when we're in the service business. You talk about staffing problems.
Yeah. Oh,
she'll help out she'll jump in and help out with those too. Every service business has staffing problems. Ours can it seems like it hits in waves, but her and my kids too. I have my two daughters and my son, they're all will jump out there and clean buildings. My oldest one cleans one regularly.
Does she really?
She does. She works at a pharmacy and she cleans a bank for me 2 days a week.
That's wonderful.
She took that job at that bank when she was 15. And I told her, I said, I'll match what you save. And she saved, ended up putting together $5,000 and bought my Jeep from me when she was 16.
Wow.
Her sister's got a work ethic just like that too. I'm proud of my kids. Really am.
Talk to me about investing. What do you do outside of the business?
It's, I, I, am not smart enough to handle all that. You may want to have to go with somebody else on that question. Sorry, Sierra.
No, you don't. But you don't invest at all.
I do. I do. Yeah. I turn it over to Ian Maddox.
Okay.
I let Ian handle it.
So you do everything you do as a
market.
I do.
Yeah, I do that. And then I'll do, I've got a Robinhood account, you know, a little side stuff that I do. But I've got a couple extra things. But it's mainly just market stuff.
Just market stuff. Yeah. Gotcha.
Nothing special.
What is one tactical piece of advice you'd give someone looking to start a business while employed?
Take advantage of every opportunity that you have to create yourself some free time. Mm. Use that income that's a steady income that you have to get yourself in a position for if it does take off, the tight times.
Yeah.
Because they're coming.
Sure, they are.
They are going to hit. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. But getting yourself in that position and setting yourself up with as much residual income as possible. The one sale things are great.
Yeah, yeah. The big contract thing, yeah, it's good.
That's not going to be the one to sustain you.
If something happened to you today and you lost everything, what would you go do?
I mean, this is probably what I would do, but if I wanted to detach and go stress-free, I would go get my truck and pressure wash driveways. That's what I would do and make it easy, simple, and I don't have to worry about anybody else.
How would you go about selling that?
Realtors, really? Property management companies, neighborhood associations, anybody that's got their house for sale. You don't want to sell your house and have this, you know, this nasty black driveway that stuff's running down. It looks disgusting.
You wouldn't go door to door. You'd go to real estate agents.
No, I'm not going to do door to door.
You'd go to real estate agents, property management companies.
If I had to start all over with just me and just wanted to simplify everything, that's something that I can do and make a pretty good living and keep my stress level low.
Yeah.
Now I want to grow beyond that. So, you know, I did not stay with that. I could have stayed there. Could have stayed there 12 years ago, but I wanted to grow beyond that.
What's the best business for a high school kid to get out there and go start and do?
I mean, you have your all stuff like grass cutting, car washing, that stuff. It's been around forever. It will always be around. One thing my dad said that I wish he had done, and I want to do this with Carter, is those summers when he's working, put him with a plumber one summer.
Mm.
Put him with an electrician one summer. Put him with a tradesman and learn that stuff. Hey, you can start businesses and doing that too, and you can make a great living.
Yeah.
Put him with an HVAC guy. I mean, you can. These trades are going to be around forever. These kids are coming out of high school and thinking you got to go rack up multiple six figure debt in 4 year education. No, you can go and learn a trade and like that and make as much, if not more, money than somebody who spent a whole lot more on their education.
That's really good. I like that idea. Putting your kids with somebody. What are you learning right now that excites you?
I think that right now it's about. I've done some things internally that set us up as a better foundation. We've got a better structure to grow from. And I think that I'm kind of looking forward to getting some things taken care of towards the end of this year. And I just really feel like 2025 with some framework and structure that we have in place is going to be a very good year for us.
What do you do when you're not working?
Deal with youth football.
Yeah,
that's a full-time job in itself.
He is right. Yeah.
Deal with that. Try to stay involved. You know, give my kids obviously as much as I can.
Yeah.
With the family, and I like to travel. Yeah. I love to travel. When I go, having that business down there in Mississippi affords me a few extra trips every year. So that's kind of nice. Good tax write-off.
Yeah, no doubt.
But I like to travel. I like to go. I'm a big Auburn football fan, sports fan.
Yeah.
I go to games and do different things like that.
What are you doing from a tax standpoint to help cut your tax burden?
It's always a challenge, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Stay on top of it as much as you can. And I guess I would, if you asked a question earlier, and I would go back to about what I would tell young entrepreneurs, make sure you pay the two guys that can shut you down. That's your tax man and your insurance man.
Mm.
Keep those guys paid.
Sure.
They'll shut your door.
Yeah.
And outside of that, you can probably have a little wiggle room, but you want to make sure that you using whatever tax write-offs you can, sheltering money where you can, but it's tough. I mean,
you pay your kids?
I do. They're on payroll.
Up to the 14.4 a year you can?
They don't pay up to that point. I don't pay them enough for that, but it's not a bad idea. I have to do that.
No, we pay our kids. I mean Georgia.
D.
14-4. Jonna, 14-4. Tegan, 14-4. Pay them all. That money, but we take that money and we put it into an IBC account for them.
Okay.
And so they never see the money, but it's got to flow from payroll into their account, into the IBC account.
Okay.
And it's, I mean, what is that? $42,000 a year that you, it is a total write-off that's going back in your pocket. So you need to get your kid. I mean, and that's going to change next year. It'll go up a little bit. Last year it was 13-something. This year it's 14. I think it's 14-4. Yeah. Obviously, look up the number and talk to your tax guy, but like, and you got to pay payroll taxes on it, but they don't have to pay income tax on that money because it's below that certain amount.
Makes sense.
So whatever you pay, say you pay, you know, your kid 10 grand this year, get $4,400 extra dollars, put it into something for them so that you can get that write-off. Make sure Carter makes 14-4. Make sure that your other kid, 14-4.
So I've not even thought about that, but you're right.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, make sure you're paying them. What do you keep in reserve for a rainy day on your business?
I try to keep it at least 2 months payroll.
2 months payroll in reserve.
Try to.
That's good. A little bit
is
less,
it always
a little
there?
Bit more. No. Yeah.
Try to.
Okay.
It's easier said than done, but with that, I know that if you hit the lull and you hit that dip, you got at least something. I can pay my people.
You got a little
and that's the thing is you got to make sure I pay them. I mean, they've always gotten paid before I do. And that's another thing people don't understand about self-employed people. Everybody gets paid before you
everybody.
Do.
Everybody.
You're the last one in line. When I mean, obviously you've gotten meal fit and you've got your whatever you were doing, your catering. How did you get into doing the big stuff that you did? Moving from Tennessee and not, you know, I know you obviously had some connections here, but
sure.
Moving from Tennessee and like to be the guy that ends up feeding Alabama recruiting and doing this podcast from Church of the Highlands.
So everything.
How did that happen?
Everything in life is leveraged on relationships. And if you can't leverage the relationships, when I say leverage relationships, that can kind of come off negatively, but God put us in these relationships for a reason. And so we have to leverage the people that are in our lives for good, because at some point they're going to want something from us. And at some point we're going to need something from them.
Mm-hmm.
That is not bad. Like if Jake Elkins, who's one of my best friends, calls me and says, "Hey, I need this. Can you help me?" Abso-freaking-lutely. Like, yeah, I can do that. And I like doing that. And so I know internally that if I ask somebody for something, if they're some of my people, they're going to like that. So we were in Tennessee and never thought we'd move from Tennessee. And then they were starting this college. And, you know, Mark called and said, "Hey, will you come be?" And he wanted me to come, like, be a dean of, like, one of the parts of the school. And I was like, "Can I still run my business?" He's like, "No." I was like, I'm not coming. And then probably a year later, he's like, "Hey, look, I got another idea. Why don't you come down here and run the food?" So can I still run my business? Like, yeah. So I do that. I was able to do that and do both. The whole great part about what I do is I get to feed these kids that are like making a dent in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Like these kids are going out and serving Jesus and doing great things for Jesus. And that's, I'm feeding them. And we got a pretty good culture here as far as they like the employees, the kids like, it's just pretty easy as far as just that's concerned. As far as like, you know, we did all the official visit meals for University of Alabama football team this past summer, and we did dinner at Coach Saban's house for Thanksgiving this last year. So those relationships, those are hard work, but it gets back to relationships. So we did Motion, which is a conference for the church 1 year, and one of the girls that was in charge of a bunch of meals said, "Hey, can you come to this meal for me?" I was like, "Yeah, how many people?" She's like, "It's like 10,000 people." I was like, "Sure, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, I can do that, whatever." So we did that. It was really difficult, really heavy lift, but we did it. Well, I don't know.
Sounds like a project.
Two years later, we just kept in contact. I mean, she just you know, whatever. And she calls, and she worked at the University of Alabama for, like, the college. Mm-hmm. And I come to find out she did recruiting. And so we got into the system of doing things for the university. Then you got to get – here's a lesson for everybody out there. You got to give stuff away for free in order to meet the right people. So if you can give something to somebody for free and just say, "Hey, come enjoy this lunch. I'm going to feed you for free and give me 10 minutes to tell you what I am, who I am, what I do." And we did that. And I asked this girl, I said, "Hey, get as many people as you can in the room." I said, "We'll feed everybody. It'll be nice during the day so that they have a reason to leave the workplace and come eat a cool lunch. Feed them." And it's going to cost you money.
Yeah.
Like, it is. But, like, So we fed people, and I got to know the right two or three people. And
we doors opened.
We got to know them. And then I get a call one day, and this lady goes, "Hey, I got a favor." I'm like, "Okay." Mm-hmm. And she goes, "Miss Terry wants something dinner, wants something different for Thanksgiving." I was like, "Okay, who's doing it?" And she told me. I was like, "Well, I think I can do better than that." And I was like, "Well, do you want me to come up with a menu?" And she's like, "Yeah." So I sent the menu to her, and she sent it to Miss Terry. And she's like, she loved it. So we went and did Thanksgiving at Coach Saban's house. Fed all the, you know, 20 or 30 players and his family and all. That was great. And then when you have an opportunity, do great, be great. When you have an opportunity and you know, not that you shouldn't be great at everything you do, but when you have an opportunity and you know that this thing could be leveraged into something else, it needs to be special.
Yeah.
The first drive, first, you know, pressure washing job for Chick-fil-A.
Taking, it didn't matter how long it took.
It didn't matter how long it took. It didn't matter.
I started it Sunday at 8. I may have been there the next Sunday.
May have been there, no doubt.
I'm not going to stop.
That's right.
Because in that moment,
yeah,
the pressure's on.
It is.
This is like I've been waiting for this. Yeah. This is my time to step up.
That's right. I knew that if I could do a good job there, and I've been in this business for 10 years, but when you can do something for that, like something of that magnitude, I knew it could lead into something else. So we get a call February of, you know, 3 months later, and this girl calls like, "Hey, I got four people tell me I need to call you. And so I just picked up the phone. I said, "Okay, and who are they?" And she told me who they were, and they were all like people that we worked with at university. And she asked me to do this job for football. And it was like, absolutely. And so we did it, and it was great. Like, Alabama Athletics is really good to work with. They're wonderful people. And so we enjoy working with them. Anything we can do for them and with them is absolutely great. But listen, when you get your shot, it honestly doesn't matter if you lose money. In some ways, you need to kill it. A lot of my team did not do Thanksgiving last year because we were at Coach's house making sure all the T's are crossed and all the I's are dotted and all everything. We spent way too much time there. And we made a little money, but we didn't make a lot of money.
But what the job itself.
But the job itself.
And the importance of it.
Yeah.
Was, you know, you felt like you had to be there.
John Maxwell says this thing, and John Maxwell comes to the college and talks all the time, and comes to the church and talks all the time. Mm-hmm. He always says, when you're in a conversation, ask the question, "Hey, who do you know that I should know? There's got to be somebody that Sam Stewart knows that I can know that can help me." Not in a negative way. Like, I'm not trying to poach your friends. I'm just like, but here's the thing, though. If you could put me in contact with somebody and it helps us, me and that other person, dude, you feel good.
Right, I do. Because you connect it.
When you can connect people, it is a great feeling. And I love doing that for, like, I'll give you a great example. The girl that I had on our podcast previously, her name's Carrie Foster. She runs a banging softball coaching business. Does wonderful. Well, I introduced her probably a year and a half ago to the guy that does our Facebook ads and Google ads, David Nips, Nips Media. And I'm like, "How's your Facebook ad?" She's like, "It's great." It's like, "Who does it?" "I forgot." It's like, "Who does it?" She's like, "Oh, David Nips." Okay. "Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm the one that introduced you to him." That makes me smile. But here's the caveat. When you introduce somebody, you better make sure they're good.
Right.
And let me tell you a bad story. So at the lake, this guy did our grass. I did our sprinkler system for our grass. And the sprinkler system is good. And the guy, it broke, but the guy was Johnny on the spot fixing it. Well, the guy, my neighbor said, "Who did your sprinkler system?" I said, "That guy named Chuck over in Rome. He did a good job." And he got, and Chuck, so Chuck is doing my neighbor. Listen, my neighbor's had nothing but problems. And I've had more problems. And God bless him. I would not recommend this guy again.
Right. Too late.
It's too late. I feel awful.
Your name's on it.
I feel awful. But the good thing is we are suffering together. That's like, right. I have problems. He's having problems. So don't use Chuck.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, but so many people need to recognize that.
Yeah.
You know, when that comes, it's not, "Oh, crap, that last week was my moment." Mm. You know, it's And it may, you may have a 10-minute heads up. That may be all you have. When you just got to go in and make, you know, make the call or give the speech or whatever it is. You may not have a whole lot of heads up.
Your story about the Ben and Biloxi in the first, that first thing, that's huge, because you never, I mean, a lot of people say, you got time to do that. No, try. Yeah. Try. If you fail, no big deal, but you need to try. And you tried last minute in the city, it's okay. No, you tried and it helped propel that business. So you got to be able to be Johnny on the spot when the time's up.
You have to be. And the thing is, when it comes in, you talked about a little bit with that story about the lady. You have to plant those seeds.
Yeah, sure.
And you planted those seeds with her, and it took a couple of years to pay dividends.
It's two or three years, yeah.
All right. And then my biggest account to this day, I had been gone from Cisco 60 days, and I'm at home literally just Googling banks and picking up the phone, just calling people, probably because I didn't have the money to put gas in the car to go door to door.
Yeah.
And I talked to the lady, and she's like, we're happy with who we got, and well, send me an email. You know, the typical running interference response. I send her an email. 14 months later, she calls me up. You sent me an email. Do you remember? No, I have no idea who you are. She's like, can you come bid on this bank? It's a bank in Pell City that I'd never heard of. And I went down there thinking it was going to be some mom and pop, massive, three-story, huge.
Huge.
And I'm in there just like, it's my moment.
Wow.
I'm going to sink or swim with this.
Yeah, sure.
And I had bid it, and at first I had bid it for like 13 or 14 hours. I forget what it was. First night we ran 27 man hours. I thought, well, this is going to be sinking. Second night it's 24. So
okay.
Then like 18. Okay, we're getting there. And then it started running at that point. That was 2014.
Wow, and you're still doing that business?
Still doing.
That's a wonderful.
Multiple locations.
Wow. Wow. All right, if someone wanted to find you in either the Anniston area, the Birmingham area, the Biloxi area, where can they find you? What's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Best way is just call my cell phone.
Perfect.
Give me a call, 205-999-2414, or you can find us on our website at stewartfacility.com.
All right. Any cleaning, or if anybody, I mean, Sam can sit in there and talk to a brick wall. So
I could.
You just want to go get coffee with Sam and learn and ask questions, do it. Sam, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.